Wednesday, July 17th. In Chicago, the Democratic National Convention is all set to renominate President Roosevelt tonight, one day ahead of schedule. And in Europe, the war continues with the resumption of daylight German bombing raids on the British Isles, with their heaviest thrust at northeastern Ireland. British planes, meanwhile, made another of their nightly raids on German bases. Now the news direct from Europe, London, Berlin, and Rome. First, the report from the British capital by Edward R. Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. American opposition to the closing of the Burma Road, as expressed in Mr. Cordell Hull's statement yesterday, caused some surprise in London. We have been told that Washington had been fully informed of each step in the negotiations between Britain and Japan, and that no objections had been raised. Talk about keeping open arteries of commerce in every part of the world sounds rather strange to the British at a time when they are fighting without effective allies for their very existence. The whole British attitude will probably be made clear in a statement in the House of Commons this afternoon. Press comment on the Far Eastern situation this morning emphasizes that Britain would welcome Washington's aid in attempting to settle the war. But no one knows what, if anything, Washington is prepared to do. This morning's Times, in commenting on yesterday's announcement in Washington, says, Mr. Hull's statement will doubtless be well received by the Democratic Convention. Tokyo reports that final and official agreement on the Burma Road has been reached. Sir John Anderson, the Minister of Home Security, found himself in the midst of an unexpected parliamentary storm last night. He asked the House of Commons to rush through a bill setting up special war courts in parts of this country affected by attempted invasion or severe bombing. The bill provides for special one-judge courts without juries, with power to impose the death sentence on civilians for such offenses as looting. There would be no appeal from the court's decision. The House of Commons didn't like Sir John's proposal, and he was barely able to finish his speech, so frequent and insistent were the interruptions. The Minister of Home Security finally had to climb down and agree to furnish more details and to discuss the matter with individual members of the House. It was the clearest indication that we have yet seen that the House of Commons has not abdicated and that the essentials of democracy remain, despite the sweeping dictatorial powers voted to the government. While the Axis propaganda machine continues to threaten Britain with a peace ultimatum or immediate invasion, the only land fighting in this war is in Africa. The official communiques from this region provide very little information. Today's Daily Herald lists the places on the frontier of the Sudan and Italian East Africa captured by the Italians and says, the layman's desire for information is not satisfied with such phrases as withdrawal according to plan. The time has arrived, says the Herald, when the Foreign Office should give us a complete survey of the war in Africa to date. London afternoon newspapers devote their front pages to President Roosevelt's statement that he does not want a third term. Editors seem to agree that he will be nominated for that third term. According to an official announcement from the Ministry of Labor this morning, the cost of food has risen 6% during the last month. On Tuesday of next week, the British taxpayer will receive some bad news. The Chancellor of the Exchequer will announce his supplementary budget. It is certain that the income tax will be increased, and the excess profits tax will probably go up. The willingness of the British public to accept the heaviest taxation in their history is impressive. When the last budget was announced by Sir John Simon, who was then Chancellor of the Exchequer, a wave of criticism resulted. Not because he was asking the taxpayer for too much, but because he was asking for too little. Next Tuesday's budget is expected to silence that sort of criticism. We've been trying to give you these last few weeks a picture of English life under the threat of total war. But the strangest picture of all is the tableau of England as retouched by the German radio speakers and designed for German listeners. This the Englishman rarely hears. The other night, the German radio said, told the German people that Englishmen are building private machine gun nests, that there are riots in London each night after dark, and that regularly, after midnight, frightened crowds begin a chase for foreigners. Well, I'm a foreigner and live here, and I haven't seen any foreigners being chased, either in the daytime or at night. A favorite technique of the German radio is to argue away the existence of democracy in this country. The Deutschland Sender declares that criticism of the government brings deportation, and that government plans to suppress all newspapers and institute one official newspaper, and that Englishmen are sentenced to 5 years imprisonment for tuning in to German radio stations. The only comment to make on that statement is that it just isn't true. I return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. Here's the latest news from the Far East. In Tokyo, Prime Minister Konoe has just accepted Emperor Hirohito's invitation to become Prime Minister and already has begun the formation of a cabinet. A Japanese Foreign Office spokesman, Yakushiro Suma, says the Japanese demand that the Burma supply route to China be closed is of no concern to the United States. Suma says the question is being negotiated solely between Japan and Great Britain. Now, Edwin Hartridge reports from Berlin.
This is Berlin. The French government of Vichy has issued an official statement that none of the great and priceless works of art in France have suffered any damage because of the war. While no details are given, the Pétain government has indicated that the Louvre Museum collection is still safe. When the war started, all the great paintings, the famous pieces of statuary, including the Vivus Mino and the Winged Victory of Samothrace, and other artistic heirlooms, were hastily created and carted away to the countryside. There, in special secret vaults, they were stored for the duration of the war. And the Louvre was left a huge empty shell, and its deserted walls, only scribbled chalk marks remained to note that the Venus de Milo hung in this spot, and Murillo's Immaculate Conception on that wall. But their eventual restoration is still a matter to be decided in the future, considering that many of the same works of art in the Louvre were taken by Napoleon from Germany and Austria. Not many people would be surprised if some of these paintings and pieces of statuary did not return to the Louvre. There's another little item of news from France this morning. Postal trains are now running again between the occupied and unoccupied portions of France. The service has been established between Paris and Toulouse, and between Paris and Clermont-Ferrand, where a number of the government ministries are now functioning. However, no civilian traffic is permitted to cross the line of demarcation. The national collection of metals, especially bronze, tin, aluminum, and copper in the war industries, is to be entered on July 31st. However, any people who care to make contributions after the end of the month are not to be dissuaded by this announcement, the papers have said. General von Schroeder, who is in charge of the air raid precautions program for the whole of Germany, has just returned from an inspection trip to Hamburg. And some of his findings and suggestions are to be found in an article in the Hamburger Femdenblatt of yesterday. The general told the residents of this big seaport that most of the casualties caused by the air raids of the British planes were due to the failure of the people to go to the shelters. The British explosive bombs have surprised the Germans by their power, he added. And it is dangerous to be caught within 200 or 300 yards of where the bomb hits because of the flying fragments. Then for the Hamburg district, an order has been issued forbidding anybody from camping on the banks of the Elbe River, either above or below the city. And the children are warned against trying to collect bomb splinters, especially on the Hamburg rooftops. Another but lighter ARP item is found this morning in the German press. Special box shelters have been designed for the protection of cows, pigs, horses, and other livestock during air raids. And all the owners of cattle are urged to buy these animal ARP shelters, particularly if they are located in any one of the areas visited by the British planes. Rationing is being introduced in Holland, according to a story in the Deutsche Zeitung. This paper is published by the Germans in the occupied territory of the Netherlands. The Dutchman will be allowed 250 grams, or slightly more than a half a pound, of butter, margarine, or fat per week. And then flour, rice, shredded oats, and other cereals are also to be rationed, as is reported. The Bursen Zeitung carries a semi-editorial today dealing with reports that the New York banking firm of Kuhn Loeb & Company has purchased, quote, a considerable part of the shares, unquote, of the Chicago Daily News. This paper, as you know, was published by Colonel Frank Knox, Secretary of the Navy. This story states the Berlin paper, is derived from the syndicated columns of Boak Carter in the United States. In pointing out that Sir William Wiseman, wartime chief of the British Intelligence Service, has returned to Kuhn Loeb to take up his position as vice president, the Bursen Zeitung calls attention to what it considers a vicious circle. Quote, This in turn explains that this banking firm belongs to that group which is financing the Stop Hitler movement, unquote. That's the Bursen Zeitung. This is Edwin Hartrich. I return you now to Columbia, New York.
This is New York. Here's a dispatch from Alexandria, reporting that fierce anti-aircraft fire greeted several Italian air raiders which appeared over Alexandria in the strong moonlight shortly before dawn. Several bombs were dropped, but there was no report of any damage. Now the news from the Italian capital, reported by Cecil Brown. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. Italian bomb is again raided Alexandria. It was announced today by the Italian High Command, but no results of the air invasion were given. A fascist submarine has sunk a large tanker in the Mediterranean, and one Italian submarine is missing. The war bulletin says fighter planes raiding Malta ran into a British formation. Two British planes were shot down, and one Italian machine failed to return. In northern Africa, the fascists bombed the airports and barracks at Marsa Matru and Sidi Barani. These are two British bases in Egypt, not far from the frontier of Libya. For several weeks, the British have been attacking the Italian fort at Capuzzo, at the Libyan-Egyptian border. The High Command says another British attack, supported by 50 tanks, was repulsed yesterday. It's rumored here today that Foreign Minister Tunnel will go to Berlin within the next few days to confer with Hitler and von Ribbentrop. As yet, there is no official confirmation of this report. It's said Tunnel's intention to go to Berlin may be directly connected with a final offer to England to make peace or face the greatest attack in history. Diplomatic circles here picture the situation this way. Hitler, speaking for the Axis powers, will make a speech. It will be heralded as the final words before the ultimate phase of the war. Tunnel, during his conference with Hitler, would convey Mussolini's views on what such a momentous speech should contain. Through Tunnel, Hitler would outline for the Duce the principles he intends to bring out. Hitler may or may not actually state the concrete requirements for the peace that the Axis would offer England. But it's said he will paint a dire picture of the fate awaiting England if Britain continues to resist. It's felt here in Rome that one of the cardinal demands of Hitler and Mussolini will be this, that the Churchill government must go and a new government established with which the Axis might negotiate. That is the chronology of events as seen in some quarters here. It will be the Axis way of saying to Great Britain, make peace or suffer the consequences. The fascist press gives a preview of the military consequences. One paper headlines, quote, defense of London will bring the destruction of the city, unquote. And another says, reign of terror in besieged England. The Popolo di Roma this morning says there is a wave of panic in England. According to this paper, England is cut off from phone and mail communication with the continent. Newspaper correspondents are subjected to an iron censorship. The people are rebellious against the Churchill government. They are overwhelmed by a great fear of defeat. The paper says that at best, England has no more than 10 to 12 divisions worthy of the name. The other troops are poorly trained or have no equipment. Every family has stocked up provisions for 30 days. The fascist paper says England is blockaded, that her gasoline supplies are running short. Most of her ships are being used to bring in food supplies. Her plane production has been so disturbed by Nazi air attacks that today Britain has the same number of machines as she had a month ago. The paper says in London, street speakers are asking for the execution of those who refuse to admit that an agreement can be made with the Axis to avoid the catastrophe. At the same time, the paper says no one in England can speak about the war unless he speaks for victory. And that's the picture of England, panic-stricken, opposed to Churchill, in a state of siege, as seen by the Rome newspaper, Popolo di Roma. This is Cecil Brown in Rome, returning you to CBS in New York.
This is New York, and here is the situation at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. President Roosevelt now is expected to be nominated for a third term tonight, a day ahead of schedule. Last night's message from the president announcing that he was not seeking renomination and did not want to be president and releasing the delegates committed to him is reported to only have spurred the draft Roosevelt movement in Chicago. And so we conclude this morning's report of national and international developments. Edward R. Murrow reported from London, Edward Hartridge from Berlin, and Cecil Brown from Rome. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.